On this 26th day of April 2011 in Alachua, Florida, we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 20, entitled The Dynasty of Puru. Text number 17. Amoghavirya, Radharshi, Mahishyam, Viryam, Adade, Shabhute, Sopuram, Yatava, Kalena, Asuta, Sa, Sutam, Amoghavirya Rajashi, Mahishyam Viryamadade, Shobhute Sopuram Yata, Kalena Sutta Sasutam. Translation. King Dushmanta, who never discharged semen without a result, placed his semen at night in the womb of his queen, Shakuntala, and in the morning he returned to his palace. Thereafter, in due course of time, Shakuntala gave birth to a son. Purport. Kanva kumarasya vane chakre samuchita kriyaha bodhva mrigendram tadasa kridati sma nabalakaha. In the forest, Kanva Muni performed all the ritualistic ceremonies concerning the newborn child. Later, the boy became so powerful that he would capture a lion and play with it. So Kanva was like the foster father or stepfather of Shakuntala. Shakuntala, the best of beautiful women, along with her son, whose strength was insurmountable and who was a partial expansion of the Supreme Godhead, approached her husband, Dushmanta. When the king refused to accept his wife and son, who were both irreproachable, an unembodied voice spoke from the sky as an omen and was heard by everyone present. Report. Maharaj Dushmanta knew that Shakuntala and the boy were his own wife and son, but because they came from outside and were unknown to the citizens, he at first declined to accept them. Shakuntala, however, was so chaste that an omen from the sky declared the truth so that others could hear. When everyone heard from the omen that Shakuntala and her child were truly the king's wife and son, the king gladly accepted them. Om Gyanatamarandasya Gyanandana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miratam Mena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So there's kind of two points being made here that come out of this little part of the pastime. And the first one involves the impregnation of Shakuntala by King Dushmanta. So in the 11th canto, there is several verses that Srila Prabhupada would quote, and there's one line in a verse that's related to this verse I cite that is kind of one of the most revolutionary lines when you think about it, the instructions in the Bhagavatam. The first verse that is Loke Vivaya Misha Madhya Seva, which describes how in the world, in the material world, these three things are always, the tendency is for people to engage in these three things: meat eating, intoxication, and illicit sex. And gambling isn't mentioned there, but that's also understood. But those three things, naturally, society devolves into that without the control of the Shastra and those who are the repositories of Shastric wisdom, namely the Brahminical class, Vaishnavas, who follow the restrictions of Shastra and who enforce Dharma, actually. Society naturally devolves into this. And we see it all around us. There's no restriction. And more and more and more, meat eating is a big step up when someone becomes a little wealthy. You know, the Chinese suddenly, they're very happy with their rice and beans, whatever they were eating, Chinese food. But now, oh yes, we can have beef just like the Americans. And there are a lot of Chinese, you know. So there's more and more meat eating going on. intoxication, illicit sex, we don't have to go into detail. That's everywhere. So then a few verses later, it's describing how, in that verse it describes how the Shastra never actually encourages these. Although those who want to screw out some justification for these sinful activities may quote here and there from the Shastra, such as, the sacrificing of a cow. There was a discussion between Lord Chaitanya and the Qazi about this. And the Qazi was trying to say, but it says in the Shastra, your Shastra, that there is sacrifice of a cow. First of all, that's not even supposed to happen in Kali Yuga, but even when it did happen, it was an old cow, and it was given a new body, and it was like that. It's not mass cow slaughter. But we know that even in India, they tried to justify cow slaughter from that, and that's why Buddha came, right? There's a whole, to preach nonviolence against the Vedas, or not even on the basis of the Vedas. We know the whole story. So, but this line here says, evam vivaya prajyana ratya, which means that sex life is not meant for ratya, for enjoyment, but rather for begetting children. And this is what this amoghavirya means, is that this Dushmanta, he never had sex except with the intention and the result of having a child. And but just think of what that means. That's so revolutionary for this modern society. It's just the opposite. They want to separate the sex life from the even idea of having a child. So you have the contraception, and then you have even worse, you have the abortion, right? Somehow to separate it. And the result is the degradation of women, the degradation of society, tons of sinful reactions coming down, disease, vana sankara, the list of results of evil results coming from this illicit sex is very, very long. So this line, and this was Prabhupada's standard. He enjoined his household disciples to come to this standard, that only sex for having children once a month, whatever it is, and if that's not the intention, no sex. This is a very difficult injunction, because naturally in this society and just in having a material body, there is a strong impetus for unlimited sex and for enjoyment. So, and yet, Srila Prabhupada implanted this idea, he wouldn't budge on it, these four regulative principles, and he gave us the method by which it is actually possible to follow this principle and the other principles. And that method is Harinam Sankirtan. That method is the powerful process of devotional service as taught by Lord Chaitanya and his followers, can even sublimate, if you will, this powerful force of sex desire and channel it into what is ultimately love of God, prema. The beautiful purports in the latter part of the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. This is the lust section. What is our real enemy? Kama. Kama esha, krodha esha, rajoga nasambuddha. Born of the mode of passion, this is your real enemy, O Arjuna. And it burns like fire, never satiated, it covers your true knowledge, right? It degrades the soul. And it's the main binding force. Now what happens when kama becomes prominent? Then krodha. There's anger comes, because you can never be satisfied with that. And when you have these illicit relationships, the adultery, then what happens? The man or the woman who's being cheated upon becomes angry, frustrated. Even to the point of murder. This goes on everywhere in society. It's practically encouraged, by the mass media. It's a disastrous situation. So, Krishna is teaching us the absolute truth. This is your real enemy. And so, spiritual life, yoga begins with controlling the senses. Tasvat tasmat tvam indayam yado niyam yabadatarshava. Papadam bhatihiyanam jnana vijnana nashanam. This is an eternal instruction. Therefore, in the beginning, control the senses and conquer this enemy, this eternal enemy known as lust, which destroys both knowledge and realization. Okay, how to do that? Now, Prabhupada in the purports, remember there's this hierarchy, right? There's the soul, and there's the intelligence, and there's the mind, and the senses, and the sense objects. So when someone is completely in the thrall of the mode of passion, of material desire. The sense objects are the controlling the senses, which are controlling the mind. The intelligence department is figuring out how to satisfy the senses. And the soul is riding this chariot of the body, completely helpless and victimized by this. So above the soul is the super soul, who's watching all of this and is sanctioning it. Not approving of it, but sanctioning it, giving the intelligence. But the super soul is Krishna. So when the soul begins to hear from the higher self, in the form of the Shastra, the form of the Guru, and sadhus, and begins to turn his attention that way, he gets the spiritual strength to control the lower self. Are we going to allow our lower self to control our higher self? Or are we going to allow the highest self, Krishna, super soul, the Guru, to control us? This is the choice of every living entity. So when that happens, then this karma can begin to be reverted back to prema. It's simply the same Radhani Shakti, the internal energy of Krishna, personified as Srimati Radharani. She's personified love of God. Sometimes I think of this as you chant, you know, as we chant Hare Krishna. That Hare Radharani, right? That's Srimati Radharani. So she is love of Krishna personified. Radha Krishna Praniya Vikruti Ladani Shakti Rasma is called the Ladani Shakti. That's the goal. That's the goal of our practice, the internal goal that we should have in mind to attain that love of God. So there it is, thousands of times a day as we're chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Rama. So we should, something you think of it that way, that it's so close. There is love for Krishna, and there is Krishna. This is the perfect Ladani Shakti and the Shaktiman we're meditating on every day. So, that love, that pure Ladani Shakti, we're part of that. We belong there, right? We're the Apara Prakriti of Krishna. But because we're minute, we have the unfortunate tendency to direct that energy toward the lower, toward the material energy, with ourselves as the enjoyer. And that becomes karma. That very Ladini Shakti, when it's contaminated by the modes of nature, mode of passion, becomes the source of misery for the soul. Krishna says, sense gratification is the source of your misery. Right? What is that? Yesang svarjita bhoga dukha yonaya yabite. Another revolutionary statement. The whole philosophy is revolutionary. Right? As Narada Muni taught to Vyasa. So this is the struggle of every sadhaka, of every practitioner of bhakti yoga, is to direct this energy, this enjoying energy, to Krishna. That he's the one that deserves all the enjoyment, all my effort for enhancing his enjoyment. Now, what do we have that we can give to Krishna? He has everything already. But by the mercy of the spiritual master and by the instructions of the Shastra, we can be brought into the stream of devotion so that our little efforts will be recognized. Krishna doesn't ignore any living entity who is trying to serve him in the proper way as instructed by his dear associate, the spiritual master. So when we chant, when we make an effort to control the senses, and direct our attention and our energy towards serving Krishna, then lo and behold, this karma doesn't impinge on our hearts so much. We find that it's possible to follow the four regulative principles. You know, miracle of miracles. And then we can progress from there into more in devotional service. If we can't do that, then it's going to be a very rocky road in devotional service. And really, this was Srila Prabhupada's desire for us, for his movement. He never budged on these principles. They're the bottom line, 16 rounds of those four regulative principles. So that, but of course, that doesn't preclude children being born within the devotional community. That's also part of Srila Prabhupada's plan, and it's part of life. So that's where the household of life comes in under regulation, that when sex life is engaged in that way, then children are born, you know, with the samskaras, with the proper consciousness, under regulation, then children are born who have a very good chance of growing up to be first-class devotees. Prabhupada had high hopes for this next generation, you know, that they would become the leaders who would really take over the world, you know, and continue what he started. I'm not going to get into all the details of how that should happen, but we'll discuss that maybe a little later. But I wanted to move on to the next part of the lesson here, from these verses describing Shakuntala and the child and Dushmanta. So the next one can be under the heading of taking responsibility. Dushmanta, now he's a very exalted king, but somehow after this marriage, forgive me, but the only thing that comes to mind is like a shotgun marriage. It really wasn't like that. I mean, in full sense, but it's kind of, they didn't stay married, but they didn't stay together very long here. But so the child comes, and exalted child, this is Bharat being born, who's a partial expansion of Krishna, described. So the child needs to be brought up by the father. And Shakuntala searches out Dushmanta. There's a whole a very nice description in the Mahabharata. I remember reading this. And he's wondering about, you know, everyone doesn't know about this wife. He must have another wife, you know, or wives, right? So he was trying to deny his paternal responsibilities here. But she was so chaste and so pure that the omen from the sky, you know, said, don't be a deadbeat dad, you know. take responsibility. So with that kind of a witness, what are you going to do? So he took responsibility, and you know, and he grew up to be a Bharata. So things turned out okay. But that, you know, this brings up the other question that was discussed yesterday, and I'd like to deal with that a little bit. But first, on the basis of this wonderful verse by Prahlad Maharaj. Prahlad has some beautiful prayers in the fifth canto. Mostly when we think of the prayers of Prahlad, we think of the seventh canto, upon the killing of Hiranyakashipu. He offered these, you know, seminal prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev. But in the fifth canto, chapter 18, entitled The Residents of Jamadweep Offer Prayers, there's some really nice prayers of Prahlad. And one of them, some of you may know, Svasjastu Vishwasa Kalak Prasidatam Dhyayantu Bhutani Shivam Mitodhya Manascha Bhadram Bhajatara Bhokshaje Aveshyatam No Matadab Haituki. May there be good fortune throughout the universe, and may all envious persons be pacified. May all living enemies become calm by practicing Bhakti Yoga, for by accepting devotional service, they will think of each other's welfare. Therefore, let us all engage in the service of the Supreme Transcendence, Lord Sri Krishna, and always remain absorbed in the thought of Him. Now, the reason why I thought of this verse is because the discussion came up yesterday about what can be called social welfare within the Hare Krishna movement. You know, if you go to the Jewish community, they have the B'nai B'rith, right? Which is where it's a welfare organization for Jews, those who qualify. They can get help. They come together and they help each other in various ways. Some may be, you know, having trouble, and you come like that. And society in general in America, right now, there's so much talk about Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, right? So how did these things come about? Well, they came about mostly from the 30s, when there was a big depression, and you had people, you know, falling. You know, there was no money, there were no jobs, and the vulnerable people in society, you know, the older people, women, children, a lot of them were suffering like anything. They were starving. They were on the street. You know, so there was this movement. Okay, well, it'll be Social Security, which means basically that the young people, the more wealthy people, will take care of the old people, even if it has to go through the government. Right? Is that at a certain point, after working your whole life, there'll be some check for you every month. You won't have to be on the street and trying to find some nice relative to live with and so forth. So, you know, this idea, now I'm not giving, you know, holding up the United States as some great paragon of virtue, but this idea that a society
is meant to be an organic whole, and that the young people, those who are working, who are well off, they take care of the old people. You see it in families, in an extended family. The idea is that yes, you know, the man, the wife, if it, you know, the man takes sannyas or whatever, he dies, you know, then she'll be taken care of by the children, and if the children aren't around, then the cousins will be there. You know, there's this idea that you have a responsibility, because after all, you know, your mother took care of you, you know, when you were helpless as a child, feeding you, nurturing you, giving you love, so forth. So don't you owe something? This idea that we have so many debts to others. Devashi Bhutat, the Ninan Bhatina, you know, to the Devas, to the other, to the people, to our parents, Pitris, you know, not recognizing these debts is animal life. It's completely degraded, and it creates horror in society. So, within the devotional community, we're meant to, as it says here, by serving Lord Krishna, we will think of each other's welfare. And you know, this is lesson ABC in devotional service. Remember the nectar of instruction, the loving exchanges between devotees. You know, dadati, pratikunnati, guhyamakati, vichati. So, you know, sharing with others, giving gifts, accepting gifts, confidentially. So that must extend toward actual, you know, welfare, what we commonly call help, monetary help, helping each other emotionally. In other words, seeing, looking out for each other. Devotees' hearts are supposed to melt. We're supposed to be soft-hearted. And, you know, it's not that we are soft-hearted and kind and compassionate to the millions and millions of devotees who somehow, you know, we can preach to on the internet or the books. But those devotees who are sitting right next to us, who maybe live, you know, 100 yards away or a mile away, we're not compassionate. You see the problem there. And Srila Prabhupada showed the way. I'm working on this Vyasa Puja book. And Jayapataka Maharaj wrote his offering. And it was almost like a stream of consciousness offering. You know, he was just speaking. I could see he just dictated it. Someone had it. But what he was remembering there was so many ways in which Srila Prabhupada showed his kindness, instructions that he had given him. And now he was always, you know, looking out for our welfare, the welfare of his devotees, his disciples. That devotees should be taken care of because they're the most valuable people in the world, and we should have feeling, and there should be feeling for them. You know, so what is that formula? You know, Nama Sankirtan, right? Vaishnav Seva, Jiva Doi, those three things. And they're not mutually exclusive. You know, the Vaishnavs are also Jivas. They also need compassion. And when we don't feel that in the society, then it's very difficult to think of our own mission, you know, of advancing a devotional service, what to speak of the preaching mission. So I thought I would share that, this verse of Prahlad Maharaj. Now he's talking about how demons can become devotees. You know, may the envious be pacified by everyone practicing. But we have to remember that we all also each have the demon within us, you know. And we all have the tendency to fall back again into old habits of simply self-centered feeling, self-centered activity and emotion, or maybe, you know, the little nuclear family. You know, this is basically what I'm thinking about. But that's not the Vaishnava vision. It's seeing the Lord in everyone, everything in the Lord, and understanding Krishna's desire that everyone will feel His kindness, both directly, you know, in the heart through His devotional service, and also by His providing for everyone. You know, decent livelihood and care when we're sick or old, in need in general. So, I don't have a formula for how to do it. You know, I don't have a formula how we can suddenly do that in our own society. But as was said, it begins in the heart. It begins in the heart. It's not something artificial. This is why the Social Security is under such attack. You know, and all of this because the rich people don't care about the poor people no more. You know, that's what's happening. This is why they're rich. You know, because they clawed their way to the top, and by stepping on the heads of other people. And so the heart becomes very hard. I was reading chapter 16 yesterday of the Bhagavad Gita. This is, you know, ahambhogi. You should aham ahambhogi. You know, I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful, happy. I kill this enemy and do that. This is who's running this country. This is the mood that pervades the ether. So we're meant to counteract that with the actual mood of real human life, which is devotional mood, caring for others. I always come back, you know, this nice little phrase from the Sundarbans. I'm not sure which one. It's quoted by Prabhupada in the second canto purport. That, you know, bhakti is this essence of bhakti is this bhajaniya, parama purusha, sukha matra, swasukha tvam. It's prose. Bhajaniya, parama purusha, sukha matra, swasukha tvam. Which means that Bhajaniya is the worship of one, the Supreme Personality, Parama Purusha, Sukha Matra. Only the happiness of the Supreme Person is your happiness. Now, but what is the happiness of the Supreme Person? Krishna. He's happy when his devotees are taken care of. We have to extend it to that. You know, that Krishna is smiling at us from the altar so beautifully, you know, enlivening. And don't get me wrong, you know, maintaining this temple, serving the deities, kirtan, observing the programs, this is also not just for each one of us, but for all the others. Just like a kirtan, a beautiful, wonderful kirtan, Mahaprabhu. So this is, you know, this is multidimensional is going on. First of all, the holy name is resounding, we're meditating on it. We're getting absorbed. We're seeing the deities, right? The senses are absorbed. But at the same time, this is a gift. Mahatma Ji and those who are participating, he's helping all of us to be enlivened, isn't it? And at the same time, we're also. You see how it's a synergistic. You remember that pastime where Lord Chaitanya is in Shiva's Angan and in the nocturnal kirtans, right? All night they would chant. And it was a very private affair. You remember that? And they wouldn't let any outsider in. You know, people, the Brahmins were getting upset, and the others, why can't I see Lord Chaitanya dancing? You know. So he kept it private. And then a few snuck in. Was it Srivastava's mother, I think, appealed to him. She wanted to see, you know. So you get this idea of her hiding in a basket and looking through the slats, you know. Maybe it was. But Lord Chaitanya says, somehow I don't feel the same ecstasy that I always feel. Somebody here who's not qualified, you know. Srivastava was frightened. He said, oh, yeah, my mother just wanted it. He said, no. And then there was this Brahmin boy who just drank milk, you know, was also allowed in. Lord Chaitanya chastised Srivas. So you think just by drinking milk, you can get my mercy? You know, he has to be a Vaishnava. So he was very submissive and he bestowed prema bhakti on him. He became a devotee. But the point I'm making is that every one of us is participating in this kirtan. Everyone who's in the room, and if you're standing stolidly and you're not, you know, that also affects the mood. In other words, not that we should feel okay. I got to dance. Okay, hi. You know, it's not. but there's something like that. In other words, we're a society, and each macrocosm of society, the kirtan that takes place in our own little environment, whether it's at home or at the temple or on the street or anywhere, we're relating to each other. And we're relating to those who hear also. There's a relationship there. I was very enlivened to read the other day in the sixth chapter, reminded again, that just by hearing the holy name, not even chanting, hearing one holy name, all the sins are destroyed. Isn't that an impetus to go out, you know, to wherever you go and chant on the street? We do every week in San Diego, of course. But wherever, yes, you know, people are waiting there. They're burning in the fire of their sinful reactions and going to hell. And you can go out there and just chant Hare Krishna in their ear and you're going to remove millions of sins. Just think, what an act of kindness. So what I'm saying is that this Sankirtan mood in which we enliven each other and it's what Krishna wants, he's happy with it. You know, Lord Chaitanya is encouraging us. Yes, lift your arms up. This should extend to all the activities of a society. You know, we're cooking together, we're working together, we're taking care of the garden together, we're helping each other. And some person has some trouble. Well, let's think about all the service they did in the last 50 years. you know, that's made our service possible. I like to do that sometimes. You know, how did this temple come about? How is it kept clean? What about the basadam? What keeps these things moving? Who's paying the bills? You know, well, everyone's working together to keep this movement going, and we should appreciate each other's service, and in this way, have a developed relationship in that way. That's how we should relate to each other. Appreciation and sharing Krishna, giving Krishna consciousness. I have a friend in San Diego, you know, a new bhakta. His name is Timmy. Number one in the United States in the month of January in distribution. He's doing quite well. He's going to initiate it soon. So, you know, I like to give the shloks, you know, so he's picked up the shlok, you know, memorization thing. He used to be a drummer, so he gets some of the beats down nicely. You know, rock band. So, you know, whenever we see each other, we have a few minutes. He's going out on Sankirtan, I'm going back to my office. You know, he's like, give me a shlok. You know, we sit down, we have a few minutes at 7 o'clock. And it's just pure nectar. You know, he has a little repertoire now, and you chant together, reminding each other of Krishna. You know, I remember, it used to be in L.A., there was one devotee, some of you may remember, Vijitatma? Remember Vijitatma? He would always carry the nectar of devotion around with him in a bag. And whenever you see a devotee, you catch a little time, you want to hear something? Boo? Yeah? And suddenly you're transported. You know, you're why? Because it's so pleasing to Prabhupada. It's so pleasing to Rupa Goswami. So pleasing to Krishna. Here they are, you know, after millions and millions of births, hearing the pure sound vibration from the pure devotee above them. So that's still available. You know, maybe it'll be the iPod you look at or whatever. Or maybe it's just something you know or remember. But this is the way we're supposed to relate to each other, giving those gifts. And on the material level, it naturally extends. Spirit, right? Matter comes from spirit. So if you have some relationship with devotees in this way, and you appreciate their service, when they have some material problem, you'll naturally, the heart will open up, you'll want to help. And on an institutional level, that will be manifest in something like, you know, the Bhaktivedanta Hospital. That didn't come about without, you know, by accident. Radhanath Swami pushed that because he has that feeling, you know, and because he saw the need, and that this would be a way of serving the devotees worldwide. And it's a great resource. If you can make it to Bombay and you get seriously ill, you know, you can get help. I went there with B.V. Madhava Maharaj, who's coming here. A few years ago, we had a checkup. And, you know, you walk in there, and there's Prabhupada sitting, you know, and you hear the bhajan. It's not an ordinary hospital. And all, you know, most of the doctors, I remember, they had tilak, you know. Wonderful. For a checkup that, of everything, including x-ray, we paid $100. It was nothing, really. For that, you pay $1,000 in America. And, you know, I was just so appreciative that this facility was there. You know, that this was such a gift. And it's the whole society is like a hospital, isn't it? Every one of these temples is a hospital. We come with our diseased mind and come to get cured. And we try to bring others that we can give. So that mood of, and I was reading today in the 70th chapter, dana, tapa, and jagya. The common thread of those three is self-denial. Right? Dana, you're giving something that's worth something to you, you give it for Krishna, you give it for... Tapa, you're denying yourself. The natural tendency is to try to be more and more comfortable and enjoy. Tapa means austerity, for a higher purpose, for purification. Jagya is the same thing. You know, it's a sacrifice for the higher good. So those three, when we embrace those for the purpose of devotional service, they naturally extend also to social welfare. You're seeing the value of devotees. We need to appreciate each other more. So by cultivating that mood, we'll naturally develop the institutions, you know, the means for helping each other in difficulty, whether it's a single woman with child, or some older person with disease, or some younger person with a problem, you know, there'll be a natural outpouring of feeling for that, which can then be channeled into an established part of the institution. Oh my goodness, I've gone kind of over. Any questions or comments on these few points? Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu. Go ahead. Okay. Madan Mohan.
never would have ended. You know, it's so nice listening, and the clock is getting turned too fast. But anyway, I once asked the question, what's the difference between confidence, feeling confident in devotional service, which is one of the requirements in nectar instruction, and pride? You know, like, oh, I understand something, oh, I'm doing good. You know, so how do you tell the difference between the two? So I asked different bodhisattvas. So I asked Baba Rupa, and he told me, he goes like this, he holds one hand up. He says, what's that? He says, that's walking with your father. You're walking because Prabhupada, Krishna's holding your hand, and so there you're feeling it's not, I'm confident because he's with me. So today, I thought of it again, but I got a different angle, and I thought I'd share it. So I was thinking, but you can also feel that he's holding your hand. So then it started moving around, and I thought, well, people have two hands up in here. Everybody's got two hands up, and they're jumping up and down during this nice kirtan. So I was thinking, when a lot of times you see the little kids with their parents in the temple room, and the parents are holding their hands and picking them up each time they're jumping. So then I kind of, I don't know what you call it, imagination, I guess. So you could see that here's Krishna and Prabhupada holding our hands, pulling us up while we're jumping. So we're actually, it was just a simple,
Thank you for that. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.